Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackedSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann, Phil Bush here with you. And Phil, it is really fun to be wrong sometimes.
Oh, my goodness. We were wrong in a bad way, and then we were wrong in a great way, and, like, all hail Justin Lewis.
Yeah, we are going to be singing the praises of Justin Lewis and Marquette basketball in general on this podcast. It's always fun to celebrate a win over the Wisconsin Badgers, and we're going to look ahead to the week that's coming up, games against Green Bay and UCLA, scheduled games, I should emphasize that. We'll get to that in a little bit. But, Phil, you know, it's I guess I've come down off the high a little bit, but it still feels good to be able to say you're the number one team in the state.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, we got to watch out for those pesky.
Yeah, I got to say, right? I should better not jinx this because we do have Green Bay this week, so that could ruin everything. But a dramatic win, for sure, over the Wisconsin Badgers on Friday night. A memorable one. I wish there were fans in the stands to celebrate that game and students to go crazy, maybe even rush the floor. I don't care. I wouldn't have judged them had they done that. But no fans in the stands. But, wins over top five teams are rare. Buzzer-beating wins are rare. Beating your rival is always great. You put all that together, and it's just it's a win we probably won't forget in the near future.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and especially the way the game ended, right? Like, it ended on a the Badgers trying to draw a charge, which didn't happen. It ended up being called a block, rightly, I might add. And then just a lack of fundamentals when it came to a box out on a free throw, which is just kind of crazy. Because the thing that everyone kind of loses track of, like, that free throw, while it would have been important to win the game, it we were tied. So the putback by Justin Lewis was phenomenal because it killed all the clock that was left and it got Marquette the win. Like, I think Marquette could have gone on to win in overtime, but, like, just to finish in that fashion, like, it's almost like all sins have been forgotten for a week, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, coming off the Oklahoma State game, I know many of us in Marquette Nation were very down. We were like, well, here we go again. We saw a game against Oklahoma State that was very frustrating because Oklahoma State went to that zone and Marquette really didn't adjust very well and just looked terrible the entire second half of that game. And we were assuming, well, here we go again. We're playing a highly ranked Badger team and just brace yourselves for the worst. And I think a lot of us did. And, just love the way it came out. You know, going off your point there about the call at the end, it being the right call, and 100% agree with you, of course, take my bias with that. But I think it was Mark Titus who made a good point on Twitter. He's like, you hate seeing a game decided on a call like that necessarily, but it was the right call, and when you try to flop your way to wins, at some point the ref's gonna say, "I'm not gonna give you that call,"
right?
And that's essentially what Trice tried to do there. I really think if Trice just plays DJ straight up, he forces a bad shot, and it is unlikely to go in because I'm not even sure DJ gets off a shot there. And DJ played well. That's something we can touch on here, is inserting him into the starting lineup and more minutes for him. But and it's been emphasized by many people who, some Wisconsin fans want to complain about the clock, that the television clock and the actual game clock on the floor were not exactly in sync. So maybe he would have gotten the shot off, but just looking from what we could see on television, it wasn't clear that he was going to get a shot off. He seemed like he was going a little slower than he needed to there. But again, Trey stepped in front of him and caused him to trip and got the foul. But again, back to my major point, I think the way Trice played it was poor, and I think he kind of got what he deserved on that call.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you were basically, you were betting the, to take a craps reference, you were betting the do not pass line, right? Like, you're betting against the table, and he basically, at a minimum, if he had just played straight up, would have been challenging a DJ, you know, shot. You know, we can
probably argue, a fadeaway, you know.
Yeah, a fadeaway or something off the glass that probably at best is a 50-50 shot. To he went with the strategy of, like, I'm going all in. Either I'm committing a foul or we're winning the game on this call right here. And I don't think that any official, especially the way they were calling that game, I don't think any official is going to take the ball out of a team, the ball out of a team's hands with an opportunity to win, right? Because calling a block or calling a charge there, there's no way Marquette wins that game, right? Like with what, even if you take the in-game clock at like 2 seconds left when that foul's committed, I don't think there's any way Marquette commits a foul, Badgers make shots, and gets down and makes any kind of attempt. So I think that's some of the calculus that officials do, whether they'll admit to it or not. I think they are going to err on the side of letting the players decide the game. And that, you know, having to hit two free throws to win a game is certainly more skill than flopping for a charge call.
They played for the flop, not for the stop. And they paid for it.
Oh,
they didn't. I just hate that style of just, you know, yeah. I'm gonna let the official
style,
give me
right?
the win.
Yeah,
yeah. It is. It's always, it has been for a long time. It's they are relying on the official to give them the ball back instead of just playing good hard nosed defense. And I love that it was not rewarded in that instance. So thrilled with it, loved it. But we have got to sing the praises of Justin Lewis, who I think he was named the Big East Freshman of the Week this week. Andy Katz gave him his National Player of the Week for his performance in the Wisconsin game. He is certainly starting to emerge as one of Marquette's best players. He has poised beyond his years as a freshman. He had the game winner against Wisconsin, but beyond that, he went for 18-8
yep.
against the Badgers. And just confident looking three-point shot. He's just confident everywhere on the floor, whether he's rebounding the ball, whether he's in the post, where he's stepping out on the perimeter. Sometimes I think he's kind of the player we hoped we would have with, like, say, if Joey Hauser had stayed. He's like yep. that kind of player, just an inside-outside threat. I just can't say enough good things about the guy. And I am just hoping we can get as many games as possible of Lewis and Garcia together. I'm not sure how long they both stay at Marquette because I think they're both talented and have a future in professional basketball. But I am cherishing having them together right now. Boy, Lewis has been damn good.
Yeah, well, and I think the thing that really sticks out to me, I mean, there's the basic level stats, right? Like the points and the boards and the shooting percentage. But, like, the mix of offensive and defensive rebounds, right? Like, I don't – who was the last really good offensive rebounder that Marquette had? Like, I'm even trying to put it – Robert Jackson, maybe, right?
I mean, it was kind of short-lived, but Ed Morrow was pretty good.
Yeah, that's true. Ed Morrow was probably the last solid offensive rebounder. But, like, Justin Lewis getting into position on shots, being there for defensive rebounds, offensive rebounds – I think he's a reliable scorer. I think it was interesting. We'll see where we have matchups. I don't know if you caught it in the Wisconsin game, but there were a couple of times, and probably Wojo adjusted a little later than I would like, but there were a couple of times, especially in the first half, when Wisconsin had Potter and Rovers in the game together, and they ended up having Lewis guarding Potter, and Potter just worked him in the post, right? Like, was just physically bigger than Justin. So it's going to be interesting to keep an eye on that. Like, if he gets into a true defensive post situation, how does he handle himself? Because that's going to be, you know, other than foul trouble, as far as I can see, that's the only reason he shouldn't be on the court, is if he cannot keep up with someone defensively. Offensively,
yeah, I think
rebounding...
You
know, he's there.
Yeah, and I think Wisconsin's bigs did give Marquette plenty of trouble, and that's not necessarily unexpected. I mean,
right.
They are good. And, you know, Potter has really been a huge boost to the program since he became eligible last year. And Rivers has always been a very solid player, and I think their experience showed against the freshmen on Friday. They got theirs, and that was fine. But, yeah, I think But yeah, you may, and yeah, you're right in that regard that they did get, they did take their lumps, but they weren't embarrassed out there.
Right.
They weren't getting just humiliated to the point that we were thinking you got to get them off the floor defensively. They were good enough defensively, and they what they brought on the other end of the floor was plenty good, especially Lewis. So, I just like watching them all out there, and I think, you know, something we kind of speculated on Twitter, and as the more I've thought about it, I'm kind of backing off it a little bit, but I think it is worth bringing up on the pod. The idea that I think three of Marquette's best players are all bigs,
yep,
is in Lewis and Garcia and Theo John. So just the temptation, I think, to have all three of them out there at the same time may be there. But the reason I hesitate there, Phil, is if you put all three of them out there and you play them for extended minutes together, what do you do when all three of them are tired and all three of them need a blow, right? Because I think then you may be hurting yourself. So as tempted as I am to see Lewis, Garcia, and John all out there together, even if it's for a limited stretch, I do think what Wojo's been doing is probably the right move, is just a rotation of three guys for two spots. So one of them is always rested, and then you just keep rotating them in and out, and maybe it gets to a situational thing at the end where maybe you're subbing offense and defense, you know, one way or the other. But those three guys have, you know, they're going to be critical if Marquette's going to make any noise in the Big East. And what do you think of the possibility of all three guys out there together?
Yeah, I think it's a dream scenario. I would love to see it. Like, I would love to see probably like a DJ Carton, Greg Elliott, Justin Lewis, Dawson Garcia, Theo John. And I don't know why I used both first and last names all throughout. But hey, here we are. We're filling minutes. Like, I'd love to see a lineup like that just from a purely fascinating basketball perspective. But rest and foul trouble, quite frankly, prevent you from putting both all three bigs on the floor at the same time. I think from a technical basketball perspective, it absolutely makes a ton of sense. I think either Dawson or Lewis can play at the three, both offensive and defensively, which would make for some fantastic matchups. I think we might see it in some games for like a 5-minute stint, or like, you know, if, hey, we need to close a gap, or God forbid it's another like, what was it, the St. John's game when we were down like 27 and Wojo just went, F it, I'm gonna go with this crazy lineup, and oh, what do you know, it worked for you know, 15 minutes or whatever. So I think we'll see it maybe spot opportunities, but I think the thing that boggles my mind is how quickly we flipped from like guard heavy, guard centric, guard focused organization to now we're big focused, big centric organization from a basketball style. And I don't know what to do about it, because like, I mean, that was really what really sustained Marquette at the end of the Wisconsin game was we went to a traditional post up offense, right? Like we were feeding Theo and to a certain extent Dawson, but certainly Justin Lewis. That Justin Lewis had what, three possessions in a row where he posted up and got buckets. So it's just an interesting switch that's been flipped, it seems.
I mean, you got to go through your best players.
Right.
And I think that's kind of what Wojo has had to do. And you know, and if we're going to criticize when things go poorly, we got to praise when things go well. I think Wojo managed the game against Wisconsin extremely well. You know, just like I said, first of all, rotating the bigs, those three guys for two spots, and having the right guys in there at the right time. I think moving DJ into the starting lineup and getting him some more minutes worked. I think he's starting to find his swagger a little bit. His shot still isn't quite there, but he confidently got some huge buckets late in that game, including the, you know, the free throw, but he had two buckets before that within the final like 90 seconds of the game. And it's kind of created by Wisconsin starting to focus on Justin Lewis a little more. Like when he would go out on a screen and roll, they would kind of follow him, and that created a lane one time definitely for DJ to get in the lane and get a big bucket, and he had a couple of those. So I think the way he handled the rotation in the adjustments in the Wisconsin game was, gotta say, it was excellent. I thought he did a great job.
I agree. I think it was interesting getting more action in the lane, right? Like DJ Carton, like you mentioned, was getting to the hoop more. in the Wisconsin game, certainly than more so than the Oklahoma State game, which was a whole other problem. But yeah, the rotational minutes were interesting. He certainly, I haven't looked, I'd have to go back and look at the minutes again, but I mean, Kobe had fewer than anticipated minutes, I would have thought, or at least what he's been playing historically. Like he had 27 minutes, which is still probably more than I would like to have seen him have, but yeah, I thought the lineups were good, right? And we got 5 solid minutes out of Dexter Akano, who, you know, in the Oklahoma State game saw 1 minute of disaster and never saw the court again. So that's progress. And I will note that I thought for a half a minute we were going to see one of those YouTube highlight moves live during the game, when I thought he was going to dunk the ball you know, on a hard drive, and unfortunately got blocked instead. But it was exciting for there for a half minute.
It was, and I'll be interested to see if he continues to tinker with the lineup as we go forward this week. But just couldn't be more excited about, you know. But I guess we gotta let it go at some point and move forward. But I do enjoy being able to troll Wisconsin for at least another year. So we have that going for us, which is nice.
Yeah. Well, maybe you know, to steal a bit of a joke from last season, maybe Wojo just needs to play some version of Wisconsin all the time.
Yeah.
Like, can we only play Wisconsin from the Big Ten? Then our record will be fine.
Yeah, because Wojo has struggled against Big Ten teams, but he is over 500 against Wisconsin, and that's certainly a good thing. And I think the important thing for Wojo and the team now is to be able to parlay this success and keep the momentum going. This is something Anonymous Eagle posted an article on Monday to this effect, and it was something I wanted to touch on the pod, so I'm basically going to be kind of copying what Anonymous Eagle wrote. But historically, Wojo teams after big wins, whether immediately after or maybe a couple games after, there's been a letdown that's kind of lost that goodwill, right? There have been a couple situations. I'll give you an example. You know, 2016, they had the big win at Providence, who was a top 10 team at the time. Then they beat St. John's. Then they lost 3 straight. Granted, 2 of them were to very good teams, Nova and Xavier, who were both like top 2 seeds that year. But then they lost at home to DePaul. 2017, they had the huge upset over number 1 Villanova, still the only time Marquette's ever beaten a number 1 team in the regular season, but then they go out the next game, immediately lose to Providence, and lost 4 of the next 5. So that goodwill went away pretty quickly. 2018, they had lost 5 of 6. The season looks like it was kind of spiraling out of control. They had that huge rally when Marcus Howard got hurt, still found a way to beat Creighton. And so it looks like maybe they're going to save the season, but then 2 games later, they go out and lose to DePaul. That pretty much sealed their fate, NIT team. 2019, they were on a roll. This is well documented. They beat Villanova. They won their next 3 on the cusp of a conference title. Lost 4 straight, close out the season, 1-1 Big East tournament, blown out by Murray State, season over. 2020, last year, defeated Villanova at home. Lost the next 2, including Providence, and then, of course, as we all know, ended up losing 6 out of 7 to close the season. So my point here, Phil, is I would love to see Marquette get 2 wins this week to keep that momentum rolling. Feel pretty good that they can get 1 against Green Bay, but then you got UCLA scheduled on Friday. So how do you feel about the possibility of keeping this momentum rolling here this week?
Yeah, it's not good. I mean, that was, in fact, it was a conversation that I had then posted to Twitter between the wife character and I, where I said something about, well, oh my God, I can't believe Wojo won this game. And her response was, don't worry, it's Wojo. He'll screw it up somewhere along the line. So that's in the air. I almost think it's kind of even worse than you portrayed in terms of like what happens. Like I have this general sense that it is always like Marquette is on a downward trend and then pops up out of nowhere to get this huge outlier win and then goes back to resets to the norm, right? Like, so it's almost like Wojo's MO is to like dwell in average or below average, then pop up occasionally, get a big win, but then not be able to sustain it.
And the thing is, to be fair, looking at, say, the next three, four, five games, going to Los Angeles and losing would not necessarily be any kind of a disaster or a choke. And then going to Omaha the following Monday and losing to that Creighton team would not be a disaster either. I think where it gets bad is if that continues to spiral out of control, and then you lose to Seton Hall at home, and then you lose to Xavier. And the thing is, that's all just then after that, you got a game against Villanova, which you're probably projected to lose anyway. So, like, I guess my point is, if, say, Marquette were to lose three of the next six, it almost would be expected according to what the predictions are. But just what I guess I'm trying to say here is that I hope that the team can continue to play well, even if they suffer expected losses, that those expected losses don't cause you to have some unexpected losses, like, say, Seton Hall at home. Or yeah. When you play maybe one of the, there's no one else on the schedule after Villanova, so, but if you then you go out and you lose to DePaul, you go to lose to Georgetown. Those are the things I'm really concerned about long-term, because like I said, if you go to UCLA and lose, that's about what's expected. If you lose to Creighton and Omaha, that's definitely expected, and it's not, I would not want to portray that as some kind of collapse or choke or anything like that.
Well, I think part of it is not just like what the result is, but how that result looks, right? Like losing to Oklahoma State, as an example, is not a necessarily a devastating thing, right? Like it, I predicted that we would lose to Oklahoma State. It's the fashion in which we lost to Oklahoma State that was so galling, right? Like where the offense looked totally stagnant and, you know, it's like we had never seen a zone before and decided to dribble the ball for 25 out of 35 seconds in the shot clock before, you know, throwing up a prayer, right? It's the style almost more so than the result that leaves me the most concerned, right? Again, not to look past Green Bay, but I'm going to. I mean, if we lose to Green Bay, man, like we have just – Wojo has hit an all-time high.
You talk about wiping out the goodwill.
Right, exactly.
That would do it.
Right, and UCLA on the road, yeah, that's a tough one. I don't think UCLA is very good, but it'll also be the first time we're living in a pandemic, right? Anything can happen. The Creighton game, again, on the road, Creighton's very good, not unexpected to lose. But in the UCLA and Creighton games, if we look not competitive or, you know, we have a history of opening up Big East play against Creighton and getting the doors blown off us, right? Like what's our average margin of victory over the last 5 or 6 years, our margin of loss? It's plus 15 points against Creighton in those openers.
Why, is it really?
Yeah. I went back and looked because if you remember, there was the New Year's Eve opening at Creighton where we lost by 22. There was last year where it's not good, right? Like we just seemingly play Creighton in the opening of the Big East season and lose bad. So if we lose those games, I'm not happy about it, but if it's like we lost on a last second bucket or, you know, hey, we were fighting the whole way and just couldn't get over the hump, that's totally different than if we just look completely lost or we can't hit a bucket or, we can't make any adjustments to the other team's approach or whatever. That's where I'm going to get really upset because, again, we've read this script. We've seen this story.
Yeah, I think I'm going to try to tell myself to remember that as I'm watching the next few games is the manner in which the games go. If the team does look unprepared or the team just, you know, something happens like what Oklahoma State did where they throw a zone at us and we just never figure it out, then that's the kind of stuff that gets frustrating. But if you go out to UCLA and UCLA suddenly is hitting every shot and just can't miss and it's like, oh, well, UCLA played great. Good for them. You know, hat tip to them. So, you know, that's of course, you know, assuming that game gets played. And again, just to make sure we don't totally blow past Green Bay, just a quick rundown on them. They're off to a tough start this year. They're 0-3. They've actually played two opponents that Marquette has. They lost to Wisconsin pretty badly, actually. Lost to them by 40. They also lost to Eastern Illinois in overtime. Their defensive numbers on KenPom are really bad, one of the worst in the country, actually. They're in the 300s on defensive efficiency. So this should be a game where Marquette's offense should be able to do just about whatever it wants. So hopefully this is a game where Marquette can get a lot of easy buckets and hopefully cruise to an easy victory. I'm like, for what it's worth, KenPom has Marquette as a 23-point favorite on Tuesday against Green Bay. So that you know, again, treat them with some respect, but they are a team that's in the way down in the 200s, dang near 300 in KenPom overall. So not a great team. This is a game you should win. It's a bye game, so I'm not going to sweat it too much. Marquette should win that one. But then again, the one we're really concerned about is, well, not concerned is, I don't know if that's the word, but one that we are very aware of, it's going to be a very challenging game, and that's going to UCLA on Friday, a game that is scheduled to be played. With what's going on in California, I can't say with 100% confidence it will be played, but it is on the schedule, and they're going to try to get it done. But, you know, UCLA is a team that a bit of a shaky start, because they really got handled in their opener by San Diego State. So they lost the opener. They barely got by Pepperdine in the game after that, and then they've beaten they beat Seattle. That's a bi-level opponent. And then they've actually started conference play. They beat Cal on Sunday. So that game was played in California on Sunday. So that they're playing games. KenPom numbers are kind of right on par with Marquette, honestly. KenPom has UCLA 35, Marquette 34. They have UCLA as a slight favorite in the game. Their offense is in the top 20, defense 54 compared to Marquette. Their offense is 43 and defense is pretty good, 27. So this is a pretty even matchup. I mean, on neutral court, it would probably be a dead heat, but they have UCLA as a slight favorite in this game, which would make sense.
Yeah, well, I think this is going to be interesting, and this will feed into a question I wanted to ask you anyway, but like, I think this will be the real first test from an offensive standpoint or an offensive variety standpoint. I tend to view Wisconsin as a little bit quirky, right? They play a relatively unique set that sometimes if you just have the right personnel, you can defend relatively well. But the Marquette defense, this will be its first real test, in my opinion. Do we think the Marquette defense is legit, right? Like KenPom, like you said, has them ranked 27th, a field goal percentage effectiveness of 6 in the country. So it's the top 6 team in basically limiting made shots, whether they're threes or twos, whatever. Like how much do you believe that right now?
Well, 6 in the country seems high.
Right.
I mean, that seems really, really high. But I will say this, and I will grant that it's a low bar, but I am pretty comfortable saying this is the best defense Steve Wojciechowski's had at Marquette.
Mm-hmm.
Again, low bar, but I think with the length and the athleticism, and the guards are not as small as they have been in past years. And again, you've got athletic bigs that you're rotating in there between Lewis, Garcia, and John. And then you've got Kane on the perimeter and as well. So I think there's plenty of length there now. So to answer your question, I think 6 seems high, but the overall defensive efficiency of 27 maybe seems a tad high, but it doesn't seem ridiculous to me. I do think this defense is pretty good. I think they get after it. I think the freshmen have shown up ready to compete defensively, and which has been important, especially Lewis and Garcia. So legit, maybe. Yeah, maybe.
I mean, it's pretty telling to me. Like, defense has always been kind of the struggle, or at least as the traditional coaches have always said it, right? Like, defense for freshmen is the hardest thing to pick up. So I think it's pretty telling. Again, a mixed bag, right? Two bye games and then two competitive games. And you can say, well, we lost the Oklahoma State game, but the Oklahoma State game was not lost because of our defense, right? Like, if anything, that the defense kept that game from getting out of hand. So I think it's really compelling that Dawson and Justin Lewis and DJ Carton, obviously not a freshman, but still playing a new style, new to the team, are able to adapt to the defense. So I think that has an impact and is very beneficial. So I until we get through this non-conference slate, right, like and maybe even into the Creighton game, like if we are still, even if we're losing games, if defensively we're in the top 30 and our effective field goal percentage is top 15, you know, that tells me through the Creighton game, that tells me that we're legit, right? Because the other thing to keep in mind with the KenPom numbers is the KenPom numbers are, at this point in the season, still leveraging last year's. Like, he's doing black magic to account for the defensive stats of the players that were on the team last year and this year, and incorporating them in and all that stuff. So it's not till you're about halfway through the season that you've got a base of current numbers. And our defense wasn't, like, you know, crazy good last year. So statistically, we're certainly well ahead of where we were last year. I mean, defensively, we finished last year at 73 for KenPom. So to be up to 27, I mean, we'll see if it sticks, but that's encouraging. Now, on the offensive side, that's got me a little worried. I mean, certainly it worked okay against Wisconsin. But, we just seem unable to hit three-point shots when they're absolutely critical. We can generally hit some shots, but I don't know that we have a go-to scorer right now outside of hopefully Justin Lewis. I mean, do you think we have a go-to scorer other than maybe Lewis?
I think that's fair, and I think that was maybe one of the slight concerns we had coming into the season is, does Marquette have an alpha dog offensively?
Right.
I wasn't sure who was going to take the winning shot during those final possessions against Wisconsin. I think now Carton showed some initiative, and he did hit some big shots late in that game, including getting fouled and getting to the free throw line. So maybe he could become that guy, but I hesitate to say he's that guy right now because his offensive rating still is not great. That may be weighed down by a slow start. But, Lewis and Garcia do look confident offensively, but again, is either the guy?
Right.
Like I said, that it's like, hey, man, late game, get a bucket. We got to get it to Justin Lewis. Or, you know, it's late in the game, we got to get the ball to Carton. No. And that's not necessarily a terrible thing, but, we miss having number zero out there and say, mm-hmm. like, we got to get in his hands and he's going to take that shot for us. So, I'm not sure we do have an alpha dog right now offensively. We have a lot of players that are promising, a lot of players that I like, a lot of guys who, if they decide to take a good look late in the game, I'm good with it, but obviously, we don't necessarily have an All-American as far as offensively right now.
Yeah.
You know, that was to be expected. But yeah, again, that doesn't mean you can't win games. But
that's going to be the gap. I think, again, if the defense is legit, can the offense come along? Which is just so bizarre after, you know, we're in year seven now and all of a sudden the script is flipped. But, you know, it's going to be a question. Can the offense come along far enough to help out the defense, right? That's going to define this season. And quite frankly, that's going to depend on what Wojo decides to do, right? Like, he has imperfect personnel. He has imperfect experience, you know, in terms of the players at his disposal. How does he balance those players to get an offensive, you know, outcome that supports the defense? Because I think the players are, by and large, interchangeably defensively, right? Not to mean that none of them is, like, any good. I just mean that you know, if you have a Kobe versus a DJ out there, I don't see a depreciable difference or an appreciable difference between the two defensively, right? Same with Justin Lewis and Theo John and Dawson Garcia, right? Like, they each have their strengths and weaknesses, but collectively, if you have some combination of the two out there, I think you're fine defensively. It's offensively where the mix, I think, is a little different at times.
Yeah, and that's not to be unexpected. It makes sense, and, you know, if Marquette has to win games with its defense this year, that is certainly a change, but that's what we'll go with.
Right.
Because I guess we got no other choice. That's, well, know, it sounds weird to say that.
But since defensive wins are, like, theoretically, they're more stable, right? Like, how many times in the Marcus Howard era did we talk about, like, last-minute wins where it's like, boy, these wins are not sustainable, right? Like, you're getting shots that go in that probably,
yeah,
maybe, probably shouldn't.
Yeah, great defense is probably more repeatable than great offense. Probably,
right.
Yeah.
That's the way I take it. So I think the summary out of this part of the discussion is defense probably good, but we're not sure. Offense, work in progress. Let's hope it gets better.
Yeah, once we get past this Green Bay game, we'll probably have a stretch here where we really see how good this defense is. When you're playing a right. UCLA team that's – I think the numbers I said earlier have changed as we've been recording this podcast. They're top 20 in offense. They're not, KenPom has them 18. Maybe it's updated as I've been looking at it. But so 18 overall in offense. Obviously, they play a much slower pace, similar to Wisconsin as far as pace. I mean, this is a – you know, Mick Cronin's teams, they'll slow it down. That's kind of their thing. But the offense is efficient. But again, you're going to play UCLA, Creighton, of course, who can score. Then you got Seton Hall and Xavier, and then you've got Villanova after that. So plenty of offensively talented teams coming Marquette's way as we lead up to Christmas. So once we get to Christmas, we'll know if this defense is legit or not. I mean, if we get through that Villanova game, we're still top 30 in the nation defensively. I think we can jump for joy and say this is a truly talented defensive team. We'll see how the offense comes along in that time, but I'm looking forward to the challenge this week. Hopefully both these games get played. Obviously, I'm going to predict a win against Green Bay, and I've been debating this whole podcast, Phil. Am I going to let myself get optimistic and predict a win at UCLA on Friday? Do I want to set myself up to get hurt? Do I want to do that?
Oh, boy. This is a tough call. Well, quite frankly, timeout. Does a game that nobody watches on television, played in front of no fans, count as a win or a loss? Does it actually?
That's right.
Happen?
The game's on Pac-12 Network, isn't it? And like nobody gets that. So I don't know what I'm going to do for that game. In a normal world, I would go to a bar and sit down and watch it. But we are not in a normal world right now. So what the hell? I'm going to say they're going to beat that UCLA team.
Oh, Joe. Oh,
I know.
Poor man. Yeah. Oh, I'm actually, again, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me 6.5 times, shame on me as well. There is no possible way that Wojo breaks out of his streak. I hope for better, but I just don't see how this team turns around and strings together a series of wins. I think we go into, I assume, the Pauley Pavilion, you know, for some Pac-12 after dark, and it does not go well. I think we end up losing by 8-10, and I get super angry. Well, I guess I'll be saved from seeing Mick Cronin's face since nobody will be able to watch the game. But it's to lose to Mick Cronin. It feels kismet right now.
Does Sling do free trials? Because I know Sling has Pac-12 Network. Maybe I'll do a weekend free trial of Sling and then cancel it.
Oh, they're gonna see. Why are we having so many free trials in the Milwaukee area? I don't understand.
Yeah, maybe I'll look into that. Maybe I'll figure out a way to watch this freaking game. But yeah, like it feels like the wrong thing. It feels like, you know, taking a bunch of chips and putting it on your lucky number at the roulette table and knowing you're probably going to lose. But I'm trying to be optimistic, and just because I love what I've seen from I love what I saw from the freshmen and against Wisconsin. And UCLA is a bit of a different challenge, and it is on the road, but we're not playing in front of a hostile crowd either. We're playing in front of absolutely nobody out there. So
I'm really curious to see what Justin Lewis, how he comes back after that. Like, I mean, it's fair to say in that Wisconsin game, that is a legendary performance, right? Regardless of what he does the rest of his career, that we will talk about the Justin Lewis Wisconsin game.
Oh, yeah. Well, when somebody says, hey, remember the Justin Lewis game? Everybody's going to remember what you're talking about.
Right. Right. Exactly.
And hopefully there will be many more Justin Lewis games, then people won't be sure what you're talking about. But for now, when people say the Justin Lewis game, they know exactly what you're talking about. So...
yeah.
Props to him, props to the team. It was a great win. It's something we can enjoy for now, but again, hopefully the goodwill does not go away this week in a tough road environment at UCLA. So.
Yeah. Well, just as a service announcement, as a support for our customers here on this podcast, I did quickly look up. You can get a free trial offer through FUBU TV or a limited trial offer through Sling TV, and they will carry the Pac-12 networks. If you have Spectrum, Cox, Dish, Frontier TV, VidGo, and Xfinity, you also maybe have Pac-12 if you got the super-duper sports package. So six of us.
Yeah, I got YouTube TV, so I'm SOL there. So maybe I'll have to look for a free trial somewhere. Oh, well. Hopefully you guys can all find a way to watch the game and without having to pack into a bar and, you know, mask up and watch it that way.
Just go get a hazmat suit. Just sit down. Yeah. Have one of those Camelbacks so you can, you know, load it with Miller Lite or your poison of choice. And, you know, you can stay in your own self-contained little bubble.
Yeah. Hopefully we can do it that way. Well, we are short on time, so we do have to get out of here for this edition of Scrambled Eggs. We appreciate you guys tuning in for us. I'm Joe McCann 3 on Twitter. Phil is MOOOF23. At Crack Sidewalks is the team handler. Go to cracksidewalks.com. We post a podcast there. You can leave your comments. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And we also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well. Give it that a like. That's where we post the podcasts. There, you can leave comments there. Phil, any closing thoughts before we get out of here?
Let's just relish one more day in the Justin Lewis game, and then let's get our focus on Green Bay and God willing, UCLA.
All right. Let's keep the good times rolling. Stay away from the Rona, seashells, and balloon earth, everybody.